The iconic Rothesay Pavilion occupies a prominent waterfront location on the Isle of Bute, a community that has been under significant economic pressure for a number of decades. As the island struggled to find a sustainable economic function, the restoration of the pavilion was seen as an important individual element of a much wider regeneration of Rothesay and Bute. The council, along with social enterprise partners Rothesay Pavilion Charity, levered substantial public sector investment from a range of national agencies and sources to restore and preserve the landmark building for future generations. The refurbishment and the extension of the pavilion was always going to be a challenging and complex project, given its Category A listed status and island location. However, a perfect storm of events forced a pause in the painstaking restoration work and threatened to derail the entire project. But the council's budget meeting for 23-24, a new £6.1 million investment was approved for the project as part of the regeneration of the Isle of Bute. The priority is now to secure the remainder of the £15 million needed to transform this important heritage asset into a 21st century multi-purpose facility that can deliver success for local communities and Scotland as a whole. With a range of new income streams and benefits achieved through additional tourist visits, entertainment events and creative and digital businesses setting up on the island. And here to talk more about it are Ross McLaughlin, Fergus Murray and Julie Tate. And here they are. So yeah. Here I'm joined by Julie, Ross and Fergus. So Julie, if I start off with you, some people listening might not be familiar with Rothesay Pavilion. I mean, we've all been involved in the project for a number of years, so it's kind of in our blood. But if somebody hasn't heard about it or hasn't seen it, what is it? What's its history and things?
Sure. For those who have absolutely no understanding or knowledge of Rothesay Pavilion, it is essentially a 1938 Art Deco Bauhaus inspired pavilion built to act as a gathering place for the community in the late 1930s. But if this project was just about restoring a concert hall, even in the 1930s, it was a contentious decision and a bold ambition by the Royal Borough leaders and councillors to create a unique attraction and gathering place that had really super appeal for tourists and visitors to the island, but also more importantly for the community to gather and to get together. And it really is built coming out of the Depression and indeed an expression of that bold ambition where people are trying to look to the future, look to the industrial age and identify where there would be growth and greater prosperity. But then, as we know, we crashed right into the Second World War, and it became a home for servicemen and personnel who were billeted there in the community to get together. But it's not just this function as a gathering place or a place of entertainment or a concert hall or a meeting place that makes this unique and will have extraordinary appeal, I think, internationally for the West Coast and the island of Bute. It's about its form. The form of architecture is completely in contrast to most of the architecture on the island, but it actually completes a narrative where you've got architecture from Bronze Age to Victorian to Tudor to mid-century modern. So on one island 13 miles long, you've got just about every architectural style on what's possible. And indeed, the Japanese create things called art islands with the very nature to attract artists and people to work and live and work on the island. But the form is important because it came from a young architect on the west coast of Scotland. That young architect was given a considerable responsibility when he put together designs that won an international competition, because his designs were inspired by his travels in Europe and in North America. And those influences, that architectural influences at that time were Art Deco particularly, but also really interestingly from the Bauhaus School of Architecture. And that school was typically quite revolutionary in the sense that it was a learning place for artists, makers, craftspeople and designers to get together. And their philosophy was to bring art back into everyday life. So it was mixed art form. It was about architecture, performing arts, design, and applied arts. But also, interestingly, it was also about the education of men and women working together on the basis that great ideas had provenance no matter what your gender. So that Bauhaus, that kind of mix really chimes well with the kind of aspirations for the future, where we want to show the products of that architecture and design, which is totally unique. They were using materials of the industrial age, things that you couldn't get before. And so the cantilevered café made steel, the wide-ranging crystal windows, all about a design of bringing lots of light, the essence of health and well-being, and that notion of bringing a melting pot for bringing people together to work in things, use new materials, demonstrate the skills and talents and ideas and innovation of people who were behind the design. That's what makes this unique. There's nothing like it in Scotland. It's the expression of a young person's aspiration. It's coming out of the aspiration of the Empire Exhibition in Glasgow, where deliberately the young architects understood the designs that were created there. Those people who created the designs judged the competition that actually he won. So clearly he's using his intelligence to create a design which would be an award-winning design. But it's that aspiration, it's a sign, it's a cultural sign of the times. This building is a symbol. And of course, it's going to be a place where you'll see fantastic exhibitions. You'll have the main hall, which everybody talks about, has the same kind of atmosphere as Glasgow Barrowlands. It's not, a concert hall where you have to be sitting quiet. It's where body, great, energy and, communications. There's also other spaces, a bit like the Cavern in Liverpool, is a kind of studio space. It's kind of underground, it's got a grungy feel to it. The cafe particularly is all part of this visitor experience where you'll be able to enjoy the provenance of the island, which is what really people are looking for when they come on a visit. They're looking for things that are truly authentic and express the character of the island. But the ambition of this place is even more important. This will be run for the island by the islanders with their aspirations and desires in mind. It is about bringing people to the island. It is about increased prosperity, but it is about trying to demonstrate one of the most ambitious community wealth projects in the country. Be run, managed, owned, planned with the community at the absolute heart. And that is pretty unique, but it's also an expression of the building's aspiration in the first place. That kind of mixing and mingling, inspiring. All of these spaces are just spaces. They're a place where they're only limited by your imagination. And that's what will place this building on the international stage, a unique piece of architecture with a unique heritage, with a completely authentic role in the community.
I think that what you've described of how it was for visitors and for the community in the past, and people who've maybe not seen it, they might actually have seen it and not realized, because it was, that you've got great pictures, I think, of when it was. There were big dances and things held on that wonderful sprung floor, and I think Len Goodman came back and traced his roots, if there's any sort of Strictly fans of, but it was those kind of things of people coming to the island, and as you say, people on the island using it as that gathering space. And that's essentially what you're describing as the vision for the future, is it will be, both for people that live here, but hopefully people will want to come and see it because it is such a striking building.
But also, how the spaces will operate, because I've met, travelers, people who work now work all over the world, and what connects them is the digital world. What connects them is the fact that they can work and live anywhere in the world and still, make a living. And so the issue of this being a hub, it's like bringing creative people together, but also attracting people who want to embrace the integral nature of the landscape and the space and the connectivity to actually grow their ideas, grow their business. grow their connection. You can be a coder, you can be a software designer, you can be a set designer, a lighting designer, you can be a journalist, you can be a photographer, a drone pilot, you can be a content developer and live and work anywhere on the island. But people are looking for this kind of environment, and the form of this building is anything can happen in those spaces, but they were designed to attract people who can work in this way. And certainly I've spoken to at least half a dozen people who have come to the island, not just to retire, but they've come to the island because they want a different lifestyle. And they want a lifestyle where they can bring up young families in a safe, rewarding, an inspiring environment, and also creatively do some work. And I think what the pavilion is set to do is it's almost like a tipping point. You're bringing together in one conversation the assets that are Mount Stuart, the castle, the pavilion, the new Butte Yard, all of which have that feel about them and unique appeal that collectively as one, they create something that's totally unique. Not just a place to come and have a concert, but a place to come and have a conference, a place to come and have a workshop, a place to come and create great content that actually then you can export all over the world. It's a place of inspiration, and it ever was. And the Bauhaus influence is reflective of what happens when you bring lots of people who are creative together in one space. And I don't mean now creative artists, people who paint it. Basically, people who need to innovate in any aspect of their life. And if anything I know about running organizations or businesses, development, product development, service development, and looking ahead to see what responds to the next trend is what it really is all about.
Yeah, I mean, what you're describing sits in a much wider regeneration, and Fergus, this is, I mean, it's been a project that's been on the go for a while, and we'll come back to that point. But, you know, it sits amongst a whole range of work that we're trying to do to regenerate the island, and arguably sits as part of our sort of work on repopulation and things. Tell us how it fits in that bigger picture.
Well, I mean, the regeneration of our kind of main towns and key settlements has been going on for quite a considerable period of time. The pavilion's kind of initial kind of thoughts about restoration came in about 2008 through the CORD initiative. And the pavilion actually is the last part of that jigsaw to be fully finished. But CORD actually sort of triggered a whole range of other regeneration activities across Argyll and Bute, where we can see evidence of that anywhere we go. But in Rossay, I mean, the pavilion was originally brought forward as a project because the community wanted something to be done to the pavilion, which was a very well-used community asset, but was in need of major investment. It's a Grade A-listed building. It needed a very sensitive approach. And so that was the kind of cornerstone of the kind of regeneration thoughts for Rossay and Bute at that time. And the pavilion was seen as, and not just as the building, as Julie said, but as an economic driver, a place to create ideas, to try new things, to embrace the digital world, all these kind of aspects. And also mirrors things that have happened elsewhere, like in St Ives and Cornwall, in terms of their Art Deco kind of pavilion, and how that actually triggered a whole regeneration buzz in that community. And I think you start to see that happening in Rossay with the other work that we've been doing through the Townscape Heritage Initiatives, the Conservation Area Regeneration Schemes, our housing investments, the new pontoons, you know, working with Bute Bid, working with others, including the private sector, to try and, you know, create more activity into Rossay and Bute. I mean, it's got tremendous heritage, Rossay, and every time I visit it, you know, you're amazed by the buildings that are there, the kind of views from the town and everything that's going on. And it still has, you know, a lot of independent shops. It still has a lot of independent eateries and public houses, which is actually quite rare now if you actually look at the rest of the of the UK. So it's got a real unique offer. It's about getting people there. So it's about destination management. So the pavilion can't be seen in isolation. I think people think, oh, it's just one building, but it's not. It's actually part of a huge jigsaw. So working with Mount Stuart, we've got the castle, you've got nature, you've got the offer of local businesses. So we can actually attract people to come to Bute, to visit it for a day, but also longer. And that's probably also generates people who actually want to live in Bute. I think we've started to see that resurgence for quite a long time. We were struggling to fill properties in Bute, but now there's the opposite. We're struggling to find places for people to live. And I know that's a big problem, a big concern, but actually it's quite a good problem to have because we can be proactive about it. It's an incredibly important building and function that we have to reinstate on the island to really capitalise on the opportunities that we have and grow them further.
Yeah, I think that description of it as part of a jigsaw is a really good one for people to imagine, because there's been so much work of individual buildings, privately owned ones that have been supported with grants, shop fronts, the winter gardens, plus the work that Mount Stuart has done. There's been, in the decade I've been in Argyle and Bute, I mean, it's been pretty constant, hasn't it? And you're looking at how you can lever in more money as well.
Yeah, it's been constant. And really, it's all about people. And people come up with great ideas and initiatives. And ultimately, what we want to do in the public sector is actually create an environment where there's a real welcoming and a place to be, to do different things, to make things happen. Private sector investment is ultimately the game in town, because we want to get to a position where we can look back and say, gosh, that community is flourishing, thriving, and our interventions are maybe to manage growth pressures rather than having to deal with deprivation, unemployment, other things that we don't want to see happen. So yeah, I think the pavilion is critical to continue that journey. And I think if we manage to, deliver an open building, a functioning building, that so many other ideas will come out of that we don't even know about. And that's what we've got to do, because, nowhere stands still. Sometimes people say to me, I liked it the way it was. I like the community the way it was. If you don't continue to invest in the community or think or move with the times, it won't be the way it was. It will decline. And I think, you can see that across Argyle and Bute, where investments have gone in, new ideas have come in, new activities have come in, and it keeps us up to date with other areas because they're all trying to invest in their communities as well.
Yeah, and I think that's what you and Julie have described in essence, is here's a building with immense heritage, but how is it made relevant and its condition fit for the future? And Ross, if I come to you, because that's not been without its challenges. So tell us kind of where we are on that journey of the restoration, because that managing the sort of building and that work, it sits in your team. And I think it's fair to say that that's taken longer than any of us anticipated or wanted, but for some pretty, I was going to say good reasons, but they're not good reasons. Understandable reasons is perhaps a better way of putting it.
No, absolutely, Pippa. And just to build on what Julie and Fergus have said, I take almost the bricks and mortar approach to a lot of things. But ultimately, Rothesay Pavilion is a council asset. It's a very valued council asset. It's an A-listed building and a really iconic location. In 2010, it was placed on the Scottish Buildings at Risk Register. So that just shows you the rate of deterioration. The do nothing option was not an option. We had to do something, and for the very reasons and the wider regeneration purposes and economic stimulation that Fergus and Julie have outlined, we were really pleased to see the proposals as they came forward in partnership with many funders like Heritage Lottery Fund, like HIE, like Historic Environment Scotland, to name but a few. So really great to see that come forward. But with that great heritage, with that island location, comes multiple complex challenges for the construction industry. Big value project, sensitive in the materials and labour that has been required. And going way back to November 2017 was when we actually commenced the construction on site. And through the build programme, which was due to complete late summer into autumn 2020, we were programmed, unfortunately, a small thing of a global pandemic came along and basically down tools on the 23rd of March, like everyone else in the country did. This was new territory for us, a lot of uncertainty. And if anyone casts their mind back to that, people literally got from their desk. And in this case, people literally put their saws, their hammers, whatever they were doing in the building, down on that Tuesday afternoon. And there has been not a great deal of work other than protection of the asset that has taken place in the interim. So the biggest impact has been the pandemic that really hit construction hard. And unfortunately, our headline contractor went into administration, into liquidation, no longer in operation, so could not pick their tools up once lockdown had eased. We then went through quite a complex process of identifying where that contractor got to through assessments, and have had to go through a procurement exercise to bring forward a new contractor to work with us to try and complete that build process. Really pleased to say that we've now got Robertson Construction, who are one of the largest, most long-standing and reputable construction firm in Scotland, now on board with us, working on the job, and we're working with them to push forward to completion in the latter phases. Where we're at right now is that our council in February approved an additional capital input to get to a wind and water tight stage. So the big thing that people on the island will see is quite a dramatic transformation after 2 or 3 years with no activity on the site, quite significant scaffolding going up around the building, a new overroof being erected. So that will protect the investment that's already been made and allow the workforce to work undercover and to bring a lot of the fabric and the windows up to a condition that would allow us to complete a wind and watertight survey. So I appreciate there's not been physically much happening on site in the last couple of years, but people within the next couple few weeks, certainly into May and into June, will see quite a dramatic upscaling of activity.
And Ross, it's maybe worth sort of explaining. So once that was paused, costs and construction went up and exponentially if you were on an island. So the costs have skyrocketed. Council put in an extra £6 million in the budget thereabouts. But I mean, the next phase then, because of that escalation, there's three phases still to do, and you're just on stage one essentially. That just now, that's the where we're at.
That's exactly right, Pippa. So where to get to that finishing point, there's been a number of global factors, the EU exit, a shortage of labour across the country, the bounce back from the pandemic, where there's a lot of pent up demand for construction, and quite frankly, a lot of more straightforward projects, maybe in central belt locations, that contractors are picking up the work, picking up someone's half-finished homework on an island's not always the most attractive proposition when the construction market is booming. So that has all driven costs up. And so we're looking to eat the elephant one bite at a time and broken it into these three distinct phases. So stage one, like I said, is what's on site just now. That'll run for 67 weeks and take us from May of this year into August next year. Thereafter, stages two and stage three, which are not funded at the moment, would take us right through to a completed building. So we're trying to break it down into manageable and ultimately affordable bite-size chunks, and we're working very closely with our existing funding partners to try and show the commitment that we've already invested in the building, get it to this wind and water site stage, and really be able to showcase that we're looking for other support to complete the building, get it to the fantastic opening that both Julie and Fergus have laid out.
And if we've got any generous benefactors listening, how much are we looking for, Ross?
Yeah, global totals, it's 15 million. That's what we're looking for, to get it to that final fixed out stage.
And Julie, I mean, I say that almost half jokingly, but it's not. We need 15 million. And yeah. And are you and the social enterprise, the charity that are going to run it, have put together that case for investment, because we really are trying to look at how we can lever in from a range of sources that additional money to that, because the costs have sadly skyrocketed.
Yeah, I mean the most important aspect of that case for support is a demonstration of why on earth anybody would invest a further 15 million in a building. And if the perception of the building is that simply it's a party venue for conferences, there is absolutely no way in the land that they would be funding coming forward. But why I'm so optimistic is because the whole aspect, the whole uniqueness, the whole history and heritage of that begs for this argument that this is the tipping point. This is the aspect of work on the island that will bring all of the assets of the island that Fergus has described to public attention as a destination, not just for holidays, but as a destination place where people would want to be able to live and work. And in doing so, bringing people together in a really functional way. Of course, there will be, begs for the creative industries, it begs for fashion, music events, design events, multimedia events. Right now, there are private companies doing extraordinary things digitally online in terms of exhibitions and spaces outside and inside. So this has got to be the embodiment of what people design, product design, what are the latest things? This is about the future, and it's about the future rather than the past. The future is the one where innovation, product development, new materials, new communications, and new ways of working and living are part of the future. So the pavilion is a way of facilitating that. That, in our view, is a really compelling argument to complete this building. Because it will transform the fortunes of the island, because it will create that fulcrum, which I think you mentioned. There's lots of people who've done lots of fantastic projects on the island. And the challenge is bringing that energy together so the sum of the parts is greater. Because what happens is people run out of steam and then they leave the island. And similarly, what we don't want is an island which is populated by people coming to live in their second homes. We want people to come and live and work and populate the schools, the hospitals, the surgeries. So again, it's not about creating, a destination where people leave and young people leave. It's really about a destination where people want to appeal to. And what makes me inspired every day is that, I talk to younger people, and they go, well, we want to go and see things that we can't see, because if we want to go and see them, we have to go off the island, and that adds to the expense. But also, they want to live and work. They want to stay here. They want to have something really good to do. So again, training, next generation careers, linking up with all the other attractions, and sustaining the energy in terms of that growth is what people, I think, will invest in I don't think people will invest in bricks and mortar just for bricks and mortar's sake.
And I think that is the key, isn't it? It's a foil for all those other things about creating a vibrant and attractive community to for people to live in and want to have those kind of access to activities and spaces where they can do those things that attract a whole range of people. And Fergus, maybe, you know, we've seen, you know, we're not just doing a punt on this. We've seen this across the area that regeneration can actually make a sustained difference. I mean, it changes not only the look of place, but how it feels and the confidence of communities, doesn't it? You're muted, Fergus.
Sorry. Yeah, I think you're right. I think what we're trying to do in terms of our regeneration activity is there's a number of actually outputs from it. But one of the key things that I think it's so important to do is to make our communities investor ready and perceived as being a place that's got a future, that is trying to, you know, be dynamic in the way it approaches things, tackles the issues that's important to the local communities. And without that kind of ethos and kind of positive way forward, you know, communities could struggle in the future. So we have seen in terms of places like Campbelltown, where we've put considerable investment into the built heritage, that's triggered a lot of small businesses, that's triggered a lot of community action. For example, the restoration of their Grade A listed cinema, which is a major attraction for the community that lives there and also visitors. You know, the kind of use of the former town hall there, which was on the dangerous, you know, buildings that were vulnerable to, you know, being lost. You know, and I could say the same for virtually every community that we have been working with. They've got a positive future. They're actually allowing people to think about their own investments, their own futures. They're attracting people back to live in these communities. And that's what we were trying to do in terms of reverse the kind of population drain that we do have in our area. And say that, look, with the possibilities of digital, the possibilities of being able to be flexible and work, we can offer a fantastic way of life, fantastic built heritage, a fantastic natural environment, and what's even more important than that, a fantastic community to be based in and raise your families or do your work or do what you want to do. So that's what our ethos of regeneration is. And we can actually demonstrate now to many funders and other kind of partners that we've actually succeeded across all of our Gael and Bute with our kind of initiatives. And we want to follow that through with the pavilion and make that a success story on the island, because I do believe it will be a catalyst for other investments in Bute. And in fact, we're already seeing that. So, you know, I just think that it's so important for us to get to a positive conclusion on this project. Not just, as I said, for the bricks and mortar, but actually what it means for the community going forward and the future of that island.
Yeah, I think catalyst is a really good word of what it's not the end point of all of this. It's just another stage on the development of the island. So, Julie, it's not... So the further stages are not without their challenges, but if people want to find out more and see how they can support the project going forward, where can they find out more information and how can they get involved?
Yeah, sure. I'm more than delighted. I refuse absolutely nothing but blows. So there is the charity who is obviously set up, ready and willing to run this when it's complete. Has a website, the rossypavilion.co.uk. There's also email addresses on there, but there's contact forms. My email address is julie@rossypavilion.co.uk. And, you know, direct communication, absolutely. You know, people are, any of our social channels, we're monitoring these social channels. I haven't been posting much lately, but again, there should be no impediment to, you know, pump in Rothsay Pavilion to any search engine and you'll reach us via the online channels and the website as well. More than happy to talk. And interesting, there is interest from all over the world in this project. And I think it's just literally building the awareness because there is a tremendous, it's rather like, I remember when I was working in the King's Theatre in Edinburgh, in Glasgow, sorry. I mean, the history and the heritage of that building and the fondness for it, people's recollection, the place and people's hearts, the nostalgia for what it was, it's quite incredible. Now you just need to infect them as to the aspiration of what it can be.
Yeah, so hopefully we've piqued people's interest. So go and if you haven't already, go and check out all the information and look at what the pavilion's been and what hopefully it will be. And any support will be continuing to raise awareness because, as hopefully people have heard, there's a real commitment to get this over the line and not just do the next phase, but all three phases so that we actually see, as we say, it's not just finish the bricks and mortar, but get people in there and really transforming what can be delivered in the community. So thank you all. If there are any benefactors listening with 15 million, don't hesitate to get in touch. We'd love to hear from you.
Before we finish, I also want to shout out to our other funding partners, the European Regional Development Fund for Scotland, Historic Environment Scotland, Highlands and Islands Enterprise, National Heritage Lottery Fund, and the Coastal Communities Fund. There's still a long way to go, but we're moving a step forward to completing this fantastic, iconic building. And if you're interested in finding out more, you can go to rothsaypavilion.co.uk for more details of the project or details on how you can donate to the project. Peppers Podcast.